Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents City of Fallen Souls, 2nd Edition, by Jez Caggio. Narrated by Wayne Mitchell. Prologue. The ground shook and pebbles danced as Martin dug frantically, clearing the last of the totem stones. He worked claws across the surface quickly, sweeping the dirt and debris free. And then he shoved the last fallen stones back, exposing the flickering runes seconds before the flickering shield would have been extinguished.
"Nothing!"
a fearful voice shouted. He turned as quickly as he could, panting in fear, his job done, and scuttled back, diving into the burrow. He landed hard, his breath whistling as he tried to calm his racing hearts. Moving closer to the middle of the tiny space, he tried to catch a glimpse of Tern through the drifting dust and darkness.
"I'm over here,"
she snapped, waddling closer, her short legs and missing front pincher forcing her to walk upright with the use of a cane.
"I swear, Martin, one more mistake and we'll all be dead. This is no time to have your head in a den of beetles."
"I know,"
Martin chittered apologetically, scrubbing at his long, pointed nose and trying to calm down.
"What are you doing?"
she asked him, softening her tone and reaching out to stroke his tufted fur.
"I was inspecting the secondary shield, trying to figure out why it stopped cleaning the air."
"That's Jacken's job now, and you know it,"
Tern said sadly.
"If you get caught meddling again, they'll pull you from the line. Then what will you do for food? If you'd been watching the way you should, the soil would never have covered that glyph totem to begin with."
"I know, Tern. Believe me, I know. But I think I figured it out. I just need a few hours."
"No! I'm sorry, Martin. But I can't watch your section and mine. Not since the ground awoke. Maybe at the end of the shift, you could go to Jacken and tell him what you think."
"No, he'd only tell the elders it was his idea. That grub licker would do anything to get higher up in the city."
"If it brought the second shield up again, would that be so bad?"
Tern asked Martin sadly. He regarded her, burdened by her filthy fur and cracked carapace that had once shone so brightly, her glorious claws that had gleamed like the darkest onyx, now split and dull.
"At least we'd be able to return to the city walls."
"And he'd be inside, while we had to fix the mistakes he made all over again,"
Martin snapped, his voice rising.
"Shh!"
Tern said frantically as others turned and glared at them both before returning their gazes to the swirling dust clouds and darkness of the deep places of the realm.
"I'm sorry, Tern, but—"
Martin started to say crossly before a scream in the distance made them all freeze.
"Shh!"
Tern repeated.
"Idiot! Shut it before they hear us!"
Another of the clan snapped, fear and anger clear in his voice as the shield pulsed above them. Thankfully, their mana sight made up for their species' poor vision, degraded after centuries in the dark places. The shield wall had been composed of dozens of layers once, designed to protect its inhabitants from all that meant it harm. It had been faithfully maintained around the Prax, known to some as a war city, by the Zondike since the day it was launched to soar like an eagle. The glory of the shielded Prax, named Marauder in the human tongue, had given hope to the lesser creatures that had seen the mighty structure flying past. Now, centuries after the cataclysm that had forced it into the ground and had killed 99% of its population in the crash, the last pitiful remnants of the crew struggled to survive. Only 3 of the shields remained after the crash. One hadn't lasted a full century before it failed altogether. When a second had also failed a little over a week ago, the load had proven to be too much for the last one. It became weak, holes appearing and resealing sporadically as the heavily damaged Prax desperately tried to hold itself together. Martin, Tern, and the rest of the Sect of Endurance had been sent to maintain the final outer shield, while Jacken, whose mate was the local official of the Artificer Sect, had been given the damage shield totem that they'd found in the second shield. He'd been puzzling over it for days now, eating their food and pretending he was making progress. Matin had suggested shortening the line somehow to cover a smaller section of the city, which would allow the rest to be consumed by the creatures of the deep, but the artificers had been horrified by the notion.
Our great ancestors constructed the shield wall this way for a reason, they had said, refusing to even countenance sacrificing some of the city, despite the hundreds of unused, abandoned buildings and lost rooms that made up more than 90% of it.
He's been thrown out of the Artificer's sect office, reduced two ranks in the Sect of Endurance, and warned that if he spoke his heretical beliefs anywhere within earshot again, his carapace would be cracked and he would be left for the Sabaar. He'd kept his mouth shut in fear after that. It had been 4 days since that terrible day, though. 4 days without sleep. The sect abandoned to the outer ring, trapped outside the walls, racing from failing totem to totem, hiding from the Sabaar as they roamed endlessly. Now, with the shield wall barely active as the Sabaar tunneled and battered at it, and the boundary's mana slowly seeping into the darkness through dozens of fractures in the crystals, he'd reached rock bottom.
It's our only chance, Martin whimpered, anger and frustration tinging his natural cowardice and forcing him to speak. The only way we survive today is if the secondary shield comes back on. Already the air grows thick enough to choke on. Without it cleaning the air, we'll all die long before the Sabaar can eat us.
Not if you let them know we're here first,
another clan member hissed, swiping at Martin with his claws extended to leave 3 scratches across his fur and a clear final warning. Martin hissed in pain, then pushed up to stand on his rear feet, blowing his chest out and raising his crest in warning. The others hastily backed away from the clearly visible acid glands he pushed into view.
Enough!
Tern snarled.
Both of you leave it! Martin, you're an idiot! But you've got a point. We'll cover your section between us all, but you've got 2 hours. If you can't make it work by then, you'll give all your notes to Jacken, and you'll get back on the line. Accept that, or we won't help you.
2 members of the clan started to snarl in protest before she hissed at them, her venom gland spraying the air where they crouched, a clear warning that she was tired of their shit.
Fine!
The clan member who'd scratched Martin snarled after a few seconds.
But he leaves his food here. If we had to do his work, we'd get his food.
Fine,
Martin snapped back at the miserable excuse for a weasel.
And when I fix the shield, I'll tell the elders how much you helped.
He bared his teeth, shifting to the edge of the small burrow they were all hidden in. He stared out, the pulsing of the shield indicating when the Sabaar brushed against it in their eternal hunt for food. Martin sniffed, then spat. The taste of the air was growing fouler by the second as too many creatures' exhalations built up inside and poisoned what had once been their greatest strength, the magically purified air of the lost city of Marauder.
I can do this. I can,
he whispered to himself, peering over the lip of the burrow and waiting until the nearest Sabaar moved away. Wasting no time, he dug his claws into the dirt, pulling himself forward as fast as he could. Sniffing the air and searching as he went, he drew the symbols he'd memorized over and over in his head as he waddled across the open space to the edge of the shield.
Okay, I can do this. It's not like I'm really doing anything heretical. I was just studying the patterns of the shield wall. The elders will understand, if it works,
he muttered, pulling a sheet of embenium steel free of his pouch, which he'd secreted away for just this chance days ago.
They won't kill me. Not if I manage it. Probably,
he whimpered as he laid it flat next to the port he'd uncovered. The ports were everywhere around the outer ledge of the city. He'd always assumed they were just another part of the city, like the light globes on the wall tiles. They were simply things that were just there in the background, until a few days ago. He'd seen the fractured plate that had been taken to Jaqen glowing and spitting until it was removed from the port, fading to black and dying. He thought he knew what it meant now, that it was a focal point for the shield. He'd examined the others he could find for the second ring and found that they were all identical. That meant he was sure that if he could replicate it, he could fix the shield. He'd stolen the imbenium steel plate from the sanctified stores, despite the knowledge that they'd kill him if they caught him, and now he was ready. Just about. He sat there on his haunches, rocking back and forward as he tried to build up the courage, his claw extended and his acid glands ready. He tried not to imagine what the elders would do to him if he failed, and they found out about it. Minutes passed as he sat, frozen in fear, until the rumble of the ground warned him of the approach of another Sabar. He turned slowly, hoping the creature wouldn't notice him, and began to shake. His fear grew into bowel-loosening terror as the Sabar stopped its endless wandering and pressed up against the shield, lighting the darkness with an aurora of blues and whites. The energy crackled, resisting the creature's attempts to pass through. For now, the shield wouldn't hold. The horrible creature still got in from time to time, stubbornly pressing their way through and melting their own skin off in the attempt. Entry left them vulnerable to the sect of war who protected the Holy Lost City, but never without Zondyke losses. And there were no warriors here. The Sabar hissed in pleasure at scenting him and pushed harder, its chitinous exterior sliding back to expose the jagged teeth of its maw in its frenzy. Its rear legs skittered and gouged lines in the stone of the cavern as it worked.
"Matin!"
Tern hissed. He blinked, shaking himself free of the instinctive reaction to look over at her, her beautiful eyes staring out over the lip of an old burrow nearby.
"What? What are you?"
he started to ask, terrified of the Sabar so close and horrified that she'd seen his loss of control, the cause of the stench filling the air around him.
"Do it!"
she snarled, her head poking over the rim again to glare at him.
"I gave you this chance, Matin, and by the holy waters, if you don't use it, I'll never mate with you, I swear!"
"You'd mate? With me?"
he whimpered. She growled.
"Not if you don't fix that shield, I won't!"
He swallowed hard, turning back to the steel plate. Blanking the skittering and hissing noises of the Sabar out, he lightly touched one shaking claw tip to the smooth metal surface, drew in a steadying breath, and began to draw. He etched the outline first, inscribing the lines slowly and ensuring they were all correct before letting acid drip from his claw tips to sear deeper into the plate and create the paths. It seemed to take forever, but after a measure of time he would never be able to remember later, it was done, and he took out the final component. A gasp came from Tern as he slowly, oh so slowly, poured the crystallized mana concoction out. The glowing fluid currently filling in the carved channels was a rare and valuable commodity. He'd intended the concoction to be his gift to Tern's father if he ever got up the courage to ask her to accept him as mate. Once the mana had filled the channels, it began to harden, slowly at first, but then, like cooling wax, the surface solidified and it glowed gently, reacting to the ambient mana leakage beneath.
"I did it!"
Matin whispered in shock, staring down at the plate in his claws in awe.
"Matin!"
Tern hissed. He turned to her, waving it frantically.
"I did it!"
he cried, then immediately froze as his voice echoed back from the vast emptiness all around him. In the deep places of the realm, silence was life, as noise. A roar sounded from his left, and Matin spun to gawk up at the Sabar that had wrestled almost a third of its body through the shield wall. He forced his gaze away and chittered in horror upon seeing the telltale shimmers of others closing the distance, running to join in the feast of whatever had been foolish enough to make noise in their territory.
"Run!"
Tern squealed, matching her advice to action as she scrabbled out of the burrow and scuttled across the ring to head for the wall, shouting to the others to retreat inside. Martin scanned the area with his mana sight. The familiar bronze bumps revealed the mana flow of the holy prax of Marauder, even as the deadness of the Sabar started to break through the final shield. He felt the need to fix it, as his father and his great father had said he would. The knowledge of a turning point in his life awoke, and in feeling those around him, he knew. For the first time in his life, he wasn't too scared, too small, too hungry, or too weak to do what was right. He stood straighter, racing across the short distance to the nearest space. Then he crouched and pushed the plate into the port on the floor. Feeling the click as the hidden springs depressed underneath it, he slid it in along the runners, grit and the dust of ages making it catch for a harrowing moment before releasing. A thin line of metal curled up where it had caught against a burr on one edge, and he gibbered in fear. Terrified that he'd just ruined everything, on he went still, pushing it into place until it clicked, and the air changed. All around him, the atmosphere suddenly felt subtly wrong. His fur standing on end as tiny crackles and faint lights flickered across his form, jumping from hair to hair. Martin backed away, slowly at first, then rapidly gaining speed until he was bounding along. His limbs worked with a coordination he'd never known he possessed, making the ground fly away beneath him as he raced for the wall, even as a new light flared in the darkness behind him. The first Sabar was almost entirely through by now, only its hook stinger left outside as it roared and pulled, trying to break free. Three more were shoving at the shield nearby, their preternaturally sharp senses having spotted the fleeing Zondyke inside, and their tiny brains sensing a change in the shield that protected their quarry. More monsters slowly pushed through, and cries of alarm rose from the walls of the city. Bells rang out, summoning the warrior sect to fight as Martin ran closer. Panic filled his chest, his heart pounding in fear as the gate slammed shut. Barely a dozen feet ahead of him, the others vanishing inside just in time. He skidded to a halt, digging his claws into the metal of the outer ring deck, and he let out an unconscious moan of fear, the acrid stench of urine filling the air around him. He ran forward the last few feet, shoving at the doors, pounding on them and pleading to be let in. But it was no use. The bolts had slammed home as he'd come to a halt. The great doors couldn't be opened now, not without hours of grueling work to haul the stone blocks free again. He knew this, but it didn't stop him from pleading, promising anything to the guards as he scrabbled on the doors. A tiny, disconnected part of his brain noted the chips and scratches left in the past by others in the same situation.
"What's that?"
a voice from the ramparts cried out in shock. He turned, gibbering in fear as the Sabar that had first attacked the shield wall tore itself free at last, roaring in triumph.
"It's coming for me,"
Martin whispered, dread filling him until he saw what they had been talking about. It wasn't the Sabar they'd meant. It was the light. The faint blue light that was glowing, growing steadily stronger and filling the cavern, rising from hundreds of symbols on imbenium steel plates that ring the outer deck of the Holy Lost Prax. It was lighting up like it used to, but with so much more power. The luminous streams flickered, the Sabar snorting and biting at a mote of glowing blue light that floated upwards from its feet. Then they solidified, a wall of bright blue light arcing upwards to meet in a dome above the city, high overhead. And the light particles raced to rejoin, to complete the shield wall. They tore through everything in their path, including shredding the dozens of Sabar that had been attempting to pass through the space the freshly activated shield now took up. Martin screamed along with all the others as his sensitive, darkness-adjusted eyes were almost burned out by the light, tears running free as he panted in fear at his sudden blindness. Minutes passed, and still nothing moved, before a great voice called out above him, and he sighed in relief.
Ooh, activated the second shield wall?
The voice asked, its strange timbre echoing as the first warrior himself spoke. Matin broke down. He wanted to cling to the knowledge that he was safe again, but being this close to the first warrior was too much for his addled, panicked brain. He passed out, the most wonderful words being spoken somewhere above him.
My mate did,
Tern declared proudly.
My Matin fixed the second shield wall.
Then cheer for Matin! Cheer for the herald of the second age of the holy lost Vrax!
The first warrior boomed. Matin sank into darkness as his name was chanted, the echoes reverberating from the walls and hanging in the suddenly clear and rapidly purifying air. Chapter 1
I stared down at the three legionnaires who knelt before me and shook my head in confusion. What the hell just happened? I asked as the threads that ran through my soul to theirs suddenly ceased to vibrate. I could feel them, similar to the way I could feel my bond with Oracle, though this was far weaker.
You just took the Eternal Emperor Aemon's oaths as your own, including his claim over the Legion.
Oracle whispered to me, silence filling the cavern as everyone gaped in shock. I closed my eyes and looked inwards, forcing myself to breathe deep and slow, and I sensed him then, Aemon, in the back of my mind. His mind was, and would always be, fractured and filled with moments of madness. One minute he was offering sage advice, the next he was giggling uncontrollably or screaming in rage. But worst of all was the grief. He regularly descended into his own personal hell of recrimination, pushing himself with every suspected death of innocence, imagining the terrible fates that could have been inflicted on the billions that had died since his time. He blamed himself for every single one. And he flayed himself with them, his broken mind shattering anew every day. The times when he could perceive the world were rare, but thankfully, they were growing more frequent. He'd never taken over before, though, and the knowledge of how easily he'd managed to do so in order to activate the oath freaked me the fuck out. What if he took over permanently, or lashed out when he was in one of his moods? Worse yet, I sensed that he was now aware that he could as well. I shivered and swallowed hard, forcing myself to dismiss that thought for the moment.
So, you three have sworn to me now? I asked, feeling the threads of power joining us.
Yes, my lord,
they replied as one, looking up at me from the floor. Well, you can fucking stop that for a start, I said, shaking my head. The whole speaking at the same time is freaky. And call me Jex. I don't see any reason to be Lord this or Lord that, unless there's a good reason, okay? I gestured for them to stand. Look, get up and relax. I've got no idea who you are beyond your names, so how about you introduce yourselves and explain how the hell you found me? I asked them plaintively, ignoring the urgent flashing of my notifications. All three climbed to their feet, the bird dude, Amat, shaking his wings out as he stood.
Well, as I said, Jax,
Yen said, smiling as she took a seat again.
We are part of the Speculatores Praetoria, and form the scout wing of the surviving members of the Legion of Dravith. Your companion clearly knows who we are, but I will explain it. The Praetoria was once a unit with wide-ranging requirements. I believe we started as a scout formation, then grew into everything from investigators to advisors to the Legion. It granted those among us who rose to the Praetoria further authority, becoming counselors, monster hunters, and justicars, amongst other roles. We travel the lands, bringing law and order, seeking out corruption and killing the creatures of the night.
Yen shook her head, delving into her memories to provide the history of her order.
Our primary purpose was to give advice to the great houses who ruled the land,
Tang said, taking up the tale.
We were also tasked to report on the corruption that was growing in the empire. We would deal with it ourselves in situations where it was low enough, and report it to the Cohortes Praetoria prefects when it was beyond us. When the cataclysm struck, most of the legion was ordered to return home to the capital. They allowed less than 1 in 100 legionnaires to remain to assist the populace, but they ordered our division to stay behind, and our role grew. The higher ranks of the great houses were all in the capital, leaving only the minor sons and daughters to look after things in their lord's absences. They were the members of the family least viewed as being worthy of power. When they took their parents' places, it went badly.
It was a clusterfuck, I said, nodding.
A clusterfuck. Yes, I like that.
Yen agreed.
In essence, the realm was torn apart with the loss of the Emperor and the great houses. The moon Ishtik fell from the sky, and the legions vanished into abruptly violent seas. Waves, miles high, washed over the land. Monsters, which had been thought long extinct, emerged from the dark places. Creatures that had been captured and used to train the legions broke loose. The dead walked the land, and all the nightmares of the prophecies came to pass. Less than 5% of the population survived. The world ended, and those that remained were left to pick up the pieces.
The Legion of Dravith worked with the survivors to rebuild. We pulled in, abandoning the majority of the continent in favor of saving what areas we realistically could. For the next several hundred years, we simply tried to survive while the creatures of the night came for us. The Legion was reviled for abandoning the people, and each year we garnered fewer recruits while losing increasing numbers of our experienced fighters. The Council played games and used every trick in the book to appropriate our budget as the nobility grew in power while we lessened. Of late, the Legion's funding has been cut even further, as the ruling House of Hymnal, Lord Barabaratus, hates any who stand against him. We have been fighting the rise of the slave trade, and as such, we are paying the price now,
Tang said bitterly. You're against the slave trade? I asked carefully, and Yen met my eyes gravely.
We enforce the old laws of the Empire inside our enclave, but in the city proper, slavery is growing in popularity. We are few in number and strength now, but we heard the clarion call of your arrival. We saw your declaration of war and your assumption of power. When Barabaratus ordered us to declare our support publicly for him and deny your claim, we refused. The Legion General was immediately cut down in the street by unknown criminals in response, and we pulled our families into shelter within the enclave. We are under guard, the remnants of the great Legion of Dravith, Hymnal Division, reduced to fewer than 300 in total. We remain barely over 100 soldiers, with our families, non-combative staff, and loyal supporters, all surrounded by our enemies. Now, after all this time, you come forth and claim your place as a scion of the Imperial line? At our weakest point, you come, and we have failed you already.
Bollocks, I scoffed. The three of them stared at me, clearly shocked, and I shrugged. Look, how old are you, Yen?
I know it's generally considered bad taste to ask, but fuck it.
I'm 76 this past spring,
Yen admitted, struggling to keep her face smooth. Okay, and you two? I asked the others.
47.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?